PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week for, I believe, his first time on the show, it's Mr. Walker Slayton. He is Mizuno fame at this point, rising star of the company. Big changes over there. Walker, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited for it.
I always love the titles that come out of you guys because I feel like the end of your title is Western World, which cracks me up, right?
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, it's actually funny enough, on my little name slide, it abbreviates it to Westworld, which I'm pretty sure is a show that is not involved in golf whatsoever. So yeah, it's always kind of a joke internally too. So
that's awesome. Well, really excited to have you on the show, and we've got lots to talk about. But before we get into that, I would love to share with the folks who are listening how you arrived at this position and where you came from, because I believe you played a little college golf and found your way to Mizuno eventually, and yep, have now climbed the ladder to where you are at this point.
Yeah, playing college golf is a little bit of an overstatement. I was on a college golf team. Do not look up my stats. They were not good. But yeah, I was on a golf team and played some rounds. They weren't as pretty as my high school career was necessarily, but yeah, I mean, golf was always my passion, and decided to follow it into school for 2 years, then decided to save a little bit more money and transferred to a kind of an in-state school where tuition was a little bit less, but knew I wanted to always follow golf. So ended up majoring in marketing and then did a little bit of time working for finance and financial companies. And then found my way over actually into customer support at Mizuno in 2017. So it was answering phone calls in the call center and kind of worked my way up from there, did a little bit of time on our website team. And then in 2020, right in the middle of COVID, came over on under Vachelle and started working on soft goods. So how to, that was a fun way to kind of learn the business from the outside looking in, learning under Chris and learning under David Llewellyn and all the guys that have been here forever, just kind of learning what Mizuno was, but at the same time doing soft goods, working on things that people might not necessarily know we make, but also kind of rounding us out as a full golf company versus just an iron company or a golf club company. So did that, really focus in on golf ball, especially in that, which has done really well for us lately. But came over, started helping Chris out a little bit closer on the hard goods side with putters specifically, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. And then we've gone through some organizational changes in the last 4 to 6 months. So have had some turnover and a couple of different positional changes, but Chris is now director of golf and I've kind of stepped into his old role as the product manager for all of Western World. So working very closely with Europe and Australia and basically everywhere outside of Japan and Korea. Their product mixes, I don't know how much of the listeners may know this, but product mixes in Korea and Japan versus everywhere else are pretty different. Even just the standards they uphold are pretty different. So they kind of operate very closely with us, but they do have a separate product mix where now I kind of manage our Western World product mix everywhere outside of those regions. So that's where we stand today. The office might look a little bit familiar to all your guys too. It's the Western World Product Manager office. It is not Walker's office. So
that's great. Yeah. I laughed when you jumped in the room and I looked around. I was like, man, this feels so familiar, but we haven't done this before. So that's really, really fun. And I mentioned this as well. I saw the head covers up over your left shoulder. One of my favorite releases you guys did, sort of an entryway into the soft good discussion, at least on PHP, where we started to really pay attention to what you guys are doing on that side of things, including like the little den caddies that you put pens in, and like, you know, people start paying attention to that stuff and start focusing in because, exactly. At this point, I mean, we are creatures or suckers for a fun little thing. And I mentioned, I actually have the winter version of the putter head cover in my bag right now in the car. So it's fun, man, when you get to draw those connections. And I feel like it tells a little bit of a story too. And I think there's a very specific story built into that one. So
yeah, it's been really cool. Those were kind of my, not to take too much credit for them or anything. It's always a team effort here, but those were kind of the first thing that I built, if you will, at Mizuno. So started that limited edition launch. That was in 23, I think. But even then, you've just seen our limited edition stuff grow with the team, with even MP20 Coppers and all the way to the Iceberg set we launched back in November.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah.
Those were pretty cool, but it's been fun to kind of jump into that market a little bit. And we know we've got a very loyal customer and a sometimes psychotic consumer that plays Mizunos, and we love feeding directly into that because we're all in that same boat. So it's pretty cool.
Especially from an iron side, you guys have this like sort of extreme perspective from your fan base. Some of them, and listen, we're all lunatics in our own way, but like there is a level of expectation that comes with a Mizuno iron player that it must adhere, sound, feel, present this way. Otherwise, I'm going to go on a rampage and get real mad at someone. probably someone that was in a former role of yours before the shift. So yeah, it's very fun to see changes come out. And we've talked a little bit with Bosch about some of the new iron concepts that are coming out, S series last year. There's M we can talk about, but I'm not sure we'll get there today. But I've always enjoyed the Mizuno way about it. It seems very calculated that lots of decisions are made before anyone really starts to talk about the product. And it all seems very intentional and controlled.
Yeah, definitely. It's the amount of standards and the amount of rigor we go through on an internal basis. I mean, we go over to Japan. The U.S. team at least goes over to Japan twice a year now. Sit down in a room for about 5 days with our main engineering team, our main product planning team, and basically just kind of level set the playing field of where we've been, what the successes we can grow on are, where our pain points have been, and then ultimately, hey, we got the best product in the market. We know it, but how do we make it that much better while ultimately staying true to ourselves? And that's the number one thing you'll always see from us is we'll talk a little bit about it today, about our new driver and where that came from. But obviously it's called the JPX1, which is public knowledge now, but how it even came to that name. Why does that make sense for us internally? And the discussions that even brought that about were, some would call it way too long, but we take everything extremely seriously, and it was as long as it needed to be to make sure that everybody was on the same page and we knew we were making the right decision. And there's no doubt we've done that.
So you're saying you'd rather talk drivers than how the food is in Japan?
Oh, no, that's not up there. That's not up for discussion. The food, we can go on for another podcast for sure. I thought it was overrated until the first time I went over, and yep, it's real. Cow tongue is fantastic, by the way, if you ever get a chance.
Yeah, the exploration into different foods there is fascinating. Frankly, I'm thrilled that I have YouTube at my disposal, but have not had the privilege of going over there. But at least we get to try the product that comes out of there, so that's kind of cool.
Definitely. Yep.
Well, let's talk JPX1, man, because it's a really crazy story. And what I love about this, you mentioned you were on Putters for a little bit with Vosh. Mm-hmm. And I remember when Omoe came out, it was leaked and everyone went nuts like, oh, it's an MOI story. And really, Omoe actually has true representation. And it was a really fun part for us on THP, because that's a place where we constantly talk about product. And when there's a new product that's out there that hasn't been explained yet, the overstep or the crazy assumptions that are made are always really fascinating. So when that came out, I had a good laugh, but it happened again. JPX1 got on the conforming list. People saw the face and said, oh, they're doing that now. And the assumption there is, oh, they went carbon in the face. So it's not that at all. And frankly, it's a totally new boundary that seems to be getting covered here, which is exciting because we love to see new concepts come out in the game. I'll let you start talking about it because I've said enough at this point. But
sure.
But you had to know when that dropped on conforming list, people were going to go nuts about the wrong thing.
Oh, of course. And I mean, credit where credit's due. There's another company obviously doing a carbon face out there, and their marketing voice is a whole lot louder than ours. So we knew that was going to be the case from the beginning. They were kind of the first ones to do anything different with a face, at least in a very long time. So we knew we were going to be up against it. But ultimately, it was well, what do you do? You can either do a visible technology on the bottom of the club or visible technology on the face of the club. And if you go on the bottom, we already had the Cortec chamber that performed very well for us when we needed it. But this new technology we found that could go on the face basically more or less took the place of Cortec chamber. I don't know if that's necessarily the right vernacular for it, but what the nano alloy face allowed us to accomplish gave us the performance characteristics that we were looking for in this driver. Now, Cortec chamber going away, staying, whatever it may be, there is still a price point you have to hit. And if we put both of them on there, we knew we were going to have too much of a jump. But all to say, we had had Cortec chamber for a couple generations. We wanted to introduce this new face technology that, gosh, we've been working on for 6+ years in ways. And we can go a little bit more into the story of it as well as where that actually came from within Mizuno, because it's a pretty cool Mizuno story. To your point about carbon face and what's out there in the market, this is completely different. It is not a nano alloy face, just a nano alloy construction. It's still the same titanium face. It's actually the same, I believe, Thai LFS face that we had in the ST Max. And then basically what we do is slap a layer of nano alloy on top of it. So we don't have any of the durability issues. It's adhered to the top of it, but still flush with the actual kind of the rim so that it's within conforming and able to be on the conforming list. Completely different from anything the market knows right now.
You said 6 years in the making, but I feel like there's more depth to that because this is being pulled in. And this is one of the things I love when companies have alternative elements being directed into the technology they're using. So this actually was a baseball technology or a softball technology that started to get incorporated.
Yeah, correct. So nano alloy, it's actually nothing. I don't want to say nothing new to the golf industry, but it's been used in a shaft in the golf industry before. But basically it's a material developed by Toray, who's another Japanese company. That's one of the best things about being a Japanese company is there's so much engineering going on over there that we can directly work with somebody. I mean, Japan's the size of California. It's not nearly as big as the US is. So it's a little easier to work closely with other companies over there. So whether it be Toray, whether it be other shaft companies, or even our partnership with Chuo, our forging house, the partnerships are just a whole lot easier to get going over there. So Toray is one of those. We've had a existing relationship with them for a long time, but this nano alloy technology was a material that they had that was used in a golf shaft. And then we actually started using it from a Mizuno perspective in our softball bats first. And that was about 2 or 3 years ago, I believe. But basically what we did, we added it to essentially between the barrel and the handle as a dampening device. Mm. And what we were able to find out was that dampening device, while it did reduce vibration and help the bat feel better, the performance also took a major jump where, I mean, I can actually show a chart where you can see the top 25 home run hitting teams in college softball. We were nowhere on that list. We're now, or 12 of the top 25 home run hitting teams in softball are now using our bat with nano alloy, including the reigning national champions. But we saw that success on the softball side. And when you look at softball, baseball, and drivers, it's a pretty similar story, really. What you're trying to do is make it feel as good as possible. Of course, we are still Mizuno. So you want it to feel as good as possible, but you want the ball to go as fast as possible and as far as possible, whether you're hitting it when it's coming at you at 98 miles an hour or whether it's sitting on a tee. So we knew there was a little bit of correlation that we could take. So, hey, this is working really well in a softball bat. We're trying to have the same thing happen in a driver. It's already been used in a shaft. Where else can we use this nano alloy technology on a driver to have the performance match what we're trying to accomplish? And by putting it on the face, we actually found some really, really cool characteristics and some incredible performance that has now allowed us to bring this to market.
That's wild. And listen, man, I've got a 10-year-old in baseball. I've learned more about bats in the last 5 months than I ever thought I would know, considering how many different materials and, different two-piece, one-piece limitations based on different structured segments, like BB Corps and UTSSA. Yep. Like there are so many limitations in baseball. It really felt similar to golf in that there was a ton of conversation about durability and performance over time, and a little bit different for them. There's a break-in period, but like there's so much that sort of align with that. It doesn't surprise me that a core technology could be transferred into it, into golf, and really provide some significant benefits to it. So I'll ask the most obvious question first, because I think it's the critical one, but I also feel like Mizuno is not the kind of company that would allow for something like this to be a problem. Durability over time is a huge conversation right now in a lot of different parts. We're seeing in golf a lot of very, I don't want to use the word brittle, but potentially material that could fail is effectively what I'm trying to say, whether it's at the bottom of a driver head, whether it's on the face of a driver head, shafts and the materials that go into that, the durability over time. So nano alloy, I assume, can't exist without some quality of durability.
So that's where we are able to accomplish exactly what we want to because of what nano alloy is. So how do I put this? The best way to, obviously, like we kind of talked about, everybody's going to think of our competitor out there using a carbon face. What that carbon face is, it's a carbon face that is essentially glued to a titanium body or a carbon body or whatever you want to call it. So the only thing holding that face to the actual body of the club is glue. And basically, whenever that face is coming into impact with the ball, the only thing flexing as well is that glue. So where we're able to actually get away with it and not have those durability issues is, like I talked about a little bit earlier, but basically it's the same titanium face we already have with a sheet of nano alloy over it. So the points of failure are going to be the exact same as any other titanium driver out there. It's not going to be like the nano alloy has to be the one that's basically maintaining its structure. The titanium is still back there adding to the durability and even increasing the ball speed as well. But that's where we don't have that failure point, because all it is a sheet of nano alloy actually adhered, just like you're gluing anything else to another surface. So it's not like there's a bond line that's taking any, I guess, forces or anything like that that could fail. Now, drivers are still drivers, but basically our face is actually welded to the body of the driver rather than any glue or anything like that that would be the point of failure. So durability is always going to be an issue. I mean, you look at guys just popping faces or cracking faces, cracking heads. You can't make anything perfect, but the nano alloy and the JPX1 driver is not going to fail any more than a standard titanium driver would have. So we never had durability issues on ST's 230 stuff, and we would expect the exact same level of durability in this product as well.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting going through some of the information available online between my friend James, who writes for the Hackers Paradise. He has an incredible article breaking down, actually has your name in it a couple of times.
Uh-oh.
Quality quotes from that man. But on our homepage, really breaking down the lineup, which I thought was interesting, as well as utilizing some of the social media elements you guys have put out. I see some crazy videos where it almost looks like the water is being poured on, but it's really nano alloy. But one of the things I thought was interesting, I looked at the Cortec face is thinner now. So you talk titanium face, but you managed to make it thinner. I assume, is that based on the nano alloy and the benefits?
It is. Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of difficult to show without actually literally just like sharing a screen or going through a presentation.
Sure.
And it gets very, very nerdy. Mm-hmm. So which you'd expect from
me. We like that. Yeah, that's fine.
But basically what the nano alloy does is the actual material composition and the way the material reacts when a ball hits it is basically it takes the impact and spreads it out across the entire surface of the face, rather than having all of that force focused in on one area of said face. So because that impact is basically able to spread across the entire face, we're able to thin out then the titanium that's really making up the face, because there's not that durability issue. There's going to be less force actually working toward or all the way through the face, since it is going to be spread out. I guess the easiest way to say it, this to go back is force either has to be spread out this way or has to go back this way whenever it's not going to immediately take off that way. So the more force we can get to spread across the face, the less we have to worry about more forces going back here. Thus, we can then thin out the titanium behind the nano alloy, which is going to increase the ball speed that much more. Because it's less weight back there, it's less resistance back there, but no durability concern because the nano alloy is actually what's taking that force, not the however many layers of carbon or anything like that that our competitors are doing, or even a thickness of titanium. We can basically use the two materials we have to complement each other versus react off of each other.
That sounds crazy, honestly. And the more I think about it, all I can think about when it comes to that is the potential for consistency across the face. Is it reasonable to assume if the face is sharing the impact, then it would be more likely that you get consistent numbers around the face?
I think that was the thing that actually surprised us the most when we saw this. So absolutely it is. We not only in our testing, and just to kind of give you an idea of how long this has been going on, we originally tested this material in the face of an ST200 driver. So I guess 2020 was when it first came about, and it was actually part of the, we call it the DAD project, but it was the Driver Advanced Development Project. So we put that on an ST200 face, and in all of our testing through the years using nano alloy on previous drivers, we didn't lose a ball test once compared to old drivers with nano alloy versus what's newest on the market. So we didn't lose a ball speed test. And then when we actually started, basically when you think of a robot, you can control wherever that ball hits. So in the center of the face, we won every single ball speed battle. But then when you started moving off the center of the face and looking a little bit more at across the face ball speeds, across the face ball flight as well, it was incredible how consistent and how much of the speed and control you maintained across the entire face.
Interesting. So
one of the, I mean, you see 10K is such a hot topic right now on the market with people actually putting that in the name of their product. We're able to achieve the exact same forgiveness of a 10K without actually having that larger head size that a lot of people tend to go away from.
Interesting.
So it's been really, really cool to see not only the ball speed in the center of the face, but everything that it's been maintaining. And honestly, the most fun is when we surprise ourselves of how well something actually does. And this was definitely no different from that.
Yeah. I like to call those moments the 1+1=3 moments where you're looking for an outcome and you get double the benefit right then and there. That's incredibly interesting, but it's also the JPX line. I think a lot of people refer to the irons, and there's a level of support benefit that comes with that when you move into that lineup. So the idea that you get to this driver, there is probably an unintended or inherent expectation of forgiveness depending on the head you choose. I know there are a couple of heads that come into this. So is that one of the primary components of support for those who might have a little bit of a squirrely golf swing, or is it like, are there other things that are occurring, weight placement, CG, things like that, that really support those off-center strikes?
All of the above is the easiest way to say it. So nano alloy definitely helps us achieve what we wanted to. But that is the point of having two different heads now as well, with the JPX One and JPX One Select. The One Select is, they're both 460 cc's, but the JPX One Select is a little bit of a deeper face, a little bit lower spinning, for the player that has a little bit more confidence and is able to work the ball a little bit better. Okay. The JPX One is, I guess the best way to say it would be a little bit between the STZ and the ST Max, where it is a little bit, lower profile, a little bit more, we like to say, confidence inspiring, where just a confident looking head shape, you're still going to be able to work the ball if you want to, but it is going to have the weight saving that you need. The weight on the back is a little bit larger in the JPX One, or at least the weight that you can't see. It's positioned a little bit further back for that forgiveness and for those launch parameters and specifications that you're looking for. But it has been very impressive and very surprising how much nano alloy has allowed us to achieve. Even with the JPX One Select, which is the one that really tells the forgiveness story, there's nothing about that driver that should be forgiving. But when you actually see the numbers on off-center strikes on the JPX One Select versus some of the best player stuff out there, any of the LS models, Titleist GT3, stuff like that, really, really good products, but we're still faster and more forgiving on a player's head. That's been very, very cool to see and very, again, surprising even internally how well this product's done.
Is it hard to land on 460 with that one in particular, or was that like a pretty natural decision based on the fact that you could create a deeper face with the same CCs?
I'd say it's probably pretty natural to land on 460, especially because, I mean, there's a reason 460 is the max. It's because if it gets any bigger, it's going to be illegal, but there's also those performance benefits going higher. So you're able to still maintain a lot of those performance benefits, staying at 460 and just kind of changing, putting a deeper face in it, changing some of the head characteristics versus if you go 440, 430, anything like that, you're going to lose some of your, I guess, other levers you can pull in that head, whether it be weighting, whether it be materials, or whether it just be the head shape in general. We elected to keep it that way because we could achieve more versus making it 440 just to say we did and say, oh yeah, this one's a little bit smaller for a player. It's like, you can still achieve what a player wants with 460 CCs.
Yeah. Well, I was a much better golfer when I played 430. So I always assume it's like the perfect solution, but we all know the benefits of 460. I think the biggest story is, can you make it look not 460 and
correct
for the guys who are more aligned with that sort of workability first mentality or that player first mentality, because we all are who we are, right? Like it is what it is. So
definitely.
So you do get a slightly different shape visual, right? When you get to address
definitely. Yep.
The one big question I have, and this is always the question, it goes all the way back to hanging out with Vosh in Atlanta, hearing Chromoly for the first time, just laughing at how much I enjoyed it.
Yep.
We have to talk about sound, because there are companies who get it extremely right, and there are companies who take a chance and maybe miss a couple years. I think the last couple iterations of Mizuno drivers I've hit have been incredibly positive. And I'm curious, does that carry into JPX and what your level of expectation and focus on that is when you move into a product like this with a new material?
Yeah, absolutely. The amount of work that goes into sound by our engineers when I first came onto the hard good side was frustrating, because they would always focus on, oh, well, it doesn't sound right, or, oh, well, we need to tweak the sound. It's like, to be honest with you, when I first started, I did not have the ear to be able to tell you if it sounded good or if it didn't. To me, I was always of the kind of the opinion that if it performs, it doesn't matter what it sounds like. The wild thing is, we've actually done so many studies on the iron side with our harmonic impact technology of how sound directly correlates to feel, and how way more of a percentage than we would like to admit of what you feel is actually what you hear. So that's no different on our drivers. We make sure to put it through every single test that we can, go through the rigors to make sure that not only does it perform correctly, but it sounds correct. And in sounding correct and feeling correct, it's going to give you the most or the best product we can put out there for you. So sound is always a fun one, where the material, we actually think it makes it sound that much better, because again, it's such a thin material anyways, and it's still reacting with titanium on the back, that it sounded, calling it sound pretty is such a weird word for me, but that's basically what we said is the first time we all hit it was, hey, this is probably the best sounding driver we've ever put out. We've said that for every single driver for the last six generations, but that's just it, is we're never satisfied.
Okay.
So we always want to make sure it sounds right. And the ultimate thing is go hit it. And that's, I guess we can go down that rabbit hole too, is it's no longer, hey, this sounds good on the first tee. It's this has to sound good indoors under fluorescent lights in a 10 by 10 box. So how do you make it sound good given the vibrations going off of trees next to the first tee versus a piece of fabric that's an indoor bay?
Yeah.
Which is where a lot of people are getting fit now. So we have to accomplish those two things, which is throwing another wrench into it. But we're fully confident we've established a sound that works everywhere and is very pleasurable to the ear.
Yeah, not just getting fit, but also the simulator golf world is kind of taken over. I mean, I've been in a sim 4 times in the last week, and it's not to get fit. So admittedly, one was a lesson where I got beat up a little bit by my coach, but that was okay because it was a net positive. So but you know, living in those bay moments is not just through a fitting anymore. It's not going to your local golf store trying the driver and buying and bailing. It's like hours with your boys in a small room that will rattle your brain. I mean, listen, I've been hitting drivers for over a decade on simulators, and I've walked away from entire releases based on purely the fact that my ears are ringing, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
So the idea that there's the recognition on that is a critical part of the story before I even get to the store and hit. It matters a lot to me, and I'm surprised that more people aren't hyper focused on it. But the other piece of it, Walker, is when you get to a certain swing speed, the sound changes a lot. Like, I've got a buddy who swings over 120, and if he were to put a driver and I can't listen to, I wouldn't go to the sim with him because it's just so loud. Like, he doesn't need manufactured noise. What he needs is quality of sound. So I'll ask one more question on the sound side and then I'll give you a break. But there is a level of acoustic that goes into, let's say, an 80 mile an hour driver swing, and there's a level that goes into 120 mile an hour driver swing. During these sound tests, are you experimenting at different distance or speeds, or is it like a very centralized speed?
No, all across the board. Because that's the one thing, and I think we kind of, just completely honest with you, we catch ourselves focusing a little bit too much on that high end sometimes. We want to see 180, 185 ball speed. Let's see what the driver does. It's like, okay, cool. 5% of the market actually has that driver speed. So how do we maintain, or how do we look out for the other 95% and make sure it's right for them too? So it's kind of fun. We'll sit in the robot room at the foundry that we just opened up this year, and we'll literally have the driver swinging at what some of us in here swing a 7-iron at. And it's like, hey, if it doesn't sound right, there's still a lot of people buying this driver that swing that, I don't want to say slow, but have that speed. So we need to make sure that the product is right across the board for every single consumer that's going to hit it. Because the last thing we want to do is pigeonhole ourselves, but also pigeonhole any consumer of, hey, this thing would sound a whole lot better if you swung it 30 miles an hour faster. That's just not fair. Some people aren't going to be allowed or be able to do that physically. Yeah. So we want to make sure we're putting out the best product for them and making it as inclusive as possible, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. I want to talk a little bit about hybrids and fairways. But looking at the whole lineup, you have a stunning visual that goes into this. And actually, some of the photos I've seen of the driver, depending on the right light, like they really appear in this almost black finish, which is super cool because when you go to the website, you see these under different light. It's very much a rich, deep blue.
Yeah.
And listen, man, I tried to Mizuno blue myself today with the shirt. I love that blue is a primary feature of the company's profile. But can you tell us a little bit about decisions on finish and how you landed here and why you decided to run it across the line?
Absolutely. So you might remember this isn't the first JPX driver we've had. We had the 800, the 850, the 900. All blue drivers. So when we went to the ST180, so we changed the name, but kept the blue head. And then the ST190 was the first black head or the black and carbon head we had for a long time. That was received really well for a change from us, but we knew we wanted to put something different out and really catch eyes in the right way on the JPX One product. So when we we're looking at different heads and working with tour guys, which is very important to us as well. We wanted to do something different that was still eye-catching, but acceptable. So that's the whole point of, I love how you said it. It almost looks black. We did that on purpose to where it would look as dark as possible, but be as, or I guess, polarize as little much as we, or as little as we could. So still have it look really, really attractive. And I don't think we're too biased in here, but when every single one of us put it down outside for the first time, it's like, holy crap, that looks even better than we expected it to. And it looks better than a black driver does. But honestly, a lot of it was complimenting the nano alloy. The nano alloy was something that really needed to stand out. We know, like we talked about already many times, there was a voice out there that was a lot louder than us doing something different with the face. But to have a face technology that is black just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And it's difficult to tell that story. Plus, this material is really, really special. So we wanted to call it out in a way that was still attractive. But putting a blue face on a black driver wasn't exactly accomplishing what we wanted to. So we used the navy instead of that royal blue that was on the JPX 900 driver back in the day. We used the navy to kind of complement that a little bit, still stand out from the rest of the market, but also just be true to ourselves where we're not going to do something just because everybody else is. And the black served its purpose on the ST product. And then when we brought JPX back, we wanted to honestly take a little bit more of a risk with, we were confident in the product. We knew it would perform. And we came out with this blue carbon look, the navy carbon look that, I mean, is just absolutely eye-catching and spectacular. I don't think we've had anybody say it doesn't look good, including some of our PGA Tour members and PGA Tour guys that are, to put it nicely, they can be absolute divas sometimes, and they've all liked it as well. So it's been really well received by everybody.
Yeah, listen, man, it's not just the tour. Spend 20 minutes on the THP forum and you'll realize that the expectations are no different from your average golfer than they are on the tour. So,
oh yeah,
pretty funny.
I've been to enough of y'all's events. I know.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit about fairway and hybrid before we wrap today. I see Cortec flowing through the line pretty aggressively. Are there specific things you'd love to call out on the fairway or the hybrid that really have an impact?
The number one thing people are going to ask, which has already been asked, is why don't the fairway and hybrid have nano alloy? The number one reason for that, as I was kind of talking about, it's a whole lot easier to visualize. So I apologize. I don't have a visual for it. I should have printed off posters or something. but basically what I was talking about with driver, where the force is actually being spread across the face, nano alloy needs surface area to accomplish what it needed to, or for performance.
Oh, interesting. So
when you start thinking about a driver face versus a fairway and a hybrid face, far less surface area on that face. So the nano alloy wasn't achieving nearly as much of a performance gain as we wanted to see on a fairway wood and hybrid, especially to the point that you can probably imagine nano alloy is not a cheap material to be able to put on a golf club. So we weren't going to put nano alloy on a club that didn't have a performance characteristic that was necessary for, or how do I put this? Sorry. We weren't going to put nano alloy on the face of a club that didn't achieve a performance characteristic that the price would have warranted. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It would have had to charge way too much, and the gain from the actual product itself would not have been substantial enough to justify that gain in price. So that's the number one thing you'll notice, is that it doesn't have nano alloy. Now, what did we do to improve the fairway wood and hybrid? We actually took the Cortec chamber on the bottom that existed previously and basically optimized it and made it that much more efficient, specifically on the edges. So you'll see, basically, for those that don't know what Cortec chamber is, it's basically a piece of or a TPU material with a piece of stainless steel actually suspended within it. And what that does is basically allows almost like a cantilever, I guess. That might be completely wrong, but basically what it does is as the ball impacts, the TPU reacts, and that weight that's in the TPU adds that much more force, because it's basically, you think of a, I love The Office, you think of a stapler in Jell-O, for instance. So whenever that jello starts moving around, that stapler is a acting as a equal or opposite force to basically add that much more momentum to the face. So what we've actually done is thinned out the stainless on the inside on the toe and heel to allow for a little bit more forgiveness on the toe and heel strikes. The center strike is going to still have that much more speed, but you're going to get a little bit more forgiveness across the face. So a little bit more, or a little bit of the same nano alloy story where there's a lot more speed across the face, but we're achieving it in a different way on both the fairway wood and hybrid.
The big takeaway from me here is you mentioned on the driver, you can only add so much without pricing it out of people's interest, yeah. Right? And the willingness to carry on some of these technologies into other products. So you see where it applies and it benefits versus, I mean, you guys could have easily put it on there and tried to convince us that it wasn't going to do anything, the nano alloy on the fairways or the hybrids, but you've clearly made a decision that supports the golfer first and the visual second when it comes to like this new tech. I'm really impressed by that decision. It's probably not an easy one, but you also are putting faith in technology you currently have in-house. And refining it, which I think is really cool, and showing us that you are living on that sort of razor's edge in what supports us the most versus what makes the most sense for us to pay for, right?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what Mizuno is. First and foremost, we're golfers. That's who we are. And we want to make people play better golf as well. But we want to be honest with ourselves too, because I mean, we were all golf consumers before we started working here, and we know how to treat people right versus wrong. And I mean, we can call it being a Japanese company. We can call it our heritage, but we're always going to treat people right. And I mean, the whole Mizuno philosophy is contributing to society through the promotion of sports. And if you're just adding stuff to our product to get a little bit better bottom line, that's not who we are. And it's never who we're going to be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're definitely proud of that.
Well, some of us are golfers. Some of us are left-handed. We can't all be,
Hey, you know, the best thing that actually happened was Chris's son, Noah, is lefty.
Okay.
He had to come to me to get a lefty putter to hand down to his son. And I just said, this is what you deserve. You hire a lefty on your team. Your son is now lefty. So I say it's because I'm on the team. It's definitely not. But the lefty market's growing, but we've also heard the comments for a long time of, hey, lefties are underserved, which you can say that all you want, but look at some other companies. We have a whole lot more lefty stuff than they do. So I will gladly be the liaison to lefties in the internal team. So
I love it. I watched a What's in the Bag from you quite a while ago. I think you were at Ballyhack when you did it, maybe
Ballyhack, yeah.
But you seemed almost apologetic about your lack of options at the time for lefties, and I could tell like it was one of those like, well, when I get in charge moments.
I will say Chris has done a really good job, but I mean, just pushing across the board to make sure that I mean, you ask what Mizuno is, and we a lot of the time we'll say we're a product company. What we really are is a fitting company. And if we're not giving everybody across the board the right options to be fit in what they need to be in, then we're not being honest. Mm-hmm. Just like we kind of talked about with what we offer and what we put in our product. So what does it say when we're saying you need to go to this direction, but we don't have that option lefty? It's like, are we really saying that? Or are we just trying to get a little bit more money out of you? But the fun thing to look at, and I won't say who, but there's another top five market share company out there right now. We actually have more left-handed irons than they have total irons. Wow. So anybody who says
clubs, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, like total iron sets.
Oh, so gotcha.
All of their iron sets combined, we have more left-handed iron sets than they have total iron sets. So
interesting.
It's people can be as loud as they want to because they love picking on us for it because we were that way, but we've definitely had the improvement. So
are you good on time? Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Plenty of time. So this sort of touches on you mentioned being in the limited edition side of things on the soft goods, and listen, we're all a sucker for that, but there is a piece that's going into club now. And whether it's you guys have dropped different finishes on your irons, adding in custom sick ferrules that look really cool in there, so I don't have to pull the heads myself to put on my own. There is a clear intention from golfers to sort of make their bag their own in their own way. And we're running out of different ways to do it, whether it's head covers, ferrules. Finishes is a big conversation. The Iceberg set is an insane example of not only what you want your bag to look like, but also what you're capable of as a company. So long question asked, are you looking at a lot of different ways to get more in depth in the limited edition market? Are you trying to be careful on how you apply it so it's still interesting?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing we always kind of talk about is how do we not overdo it? Mm-hmm. Now, the amount of people that wanted to buy the Azalea set or the Iceberg set was way more than we ever wanted to sell because it's limited edition. We don't want to put 10,000 sets out there because we want to drive, not only drive the demand, but make it cool for those guys that actually do end up getting it. Mm-hmm. So we're always weighing that. But to your point about the personalization and kind of doing something nobody else is, you'll see that continue to grow from us. We're still working on things here and there, but I mean, this past year we added JPX 925 hot metal in black, which is our most forgiving thing, a cast club, not something we would normally do. I mean, I know we added 225s in black a couple years ago, and then we've added obviously 925 forged in black, but we decided to kind of take another step into our best-selling model right now with hot metal being black and giving people an option that they hadn't previously had. That, I mean, I think on 225s, we even called them limited edition. It's no longer limited edition because you can custom order them. We're always looking to do that to give people something that I guess expresses their personality a little bit, but also it's like, hey, we have Mizuno Pro T1 wedges, but you've got denim copper, you have black, you have blue, and you have satin. So four different guys in a foursome can have the same exact clubs, but with different finishes. So it doesn't look like you're all playing the same thing. We love that. We're always looking at that stuff. And now if you want to talk about lefty stuff there, that's where I'm going to start getting in Chris's ear a little bit, because we don't do the lefty in the cool finishes, but
no, I don't really care. No, we're good there. No,
you'll see that change though. We'll see.
That's great. What about some of the soft good stuff? When are you running back the seasonal things? I missed out on a bunch of them.
That's another one. That's we want to make sure we don't overdo it. We got to keep people guessing. The fun thing with soft goods right now, and this is way too niche, but is at the Foundry, where we've got a little bit of our own pro shop actually at the Foundry for anybody who comes in, where we've got, I mean, our JB will like this, but we've got Rocks glasses in there for his bourbon with the Foundry logo. So everything at the Foundry is exclusive only for there. So that's kind of our focus right now. But also just making sure where we're focusing where we need to focus, and limited edition stuff is cool here and there where we need to drop it, where we can't. But the ultimate thing, and this is the thing I always focus on, is making sure the product's right. Mm-hmm. We're not just going to pump out a bunch of limited edition stuff and hope it sticks. We're going to wait until we have a really cool idea and then bring it to market. And a lot of the time that is a Mizuno specific idea. I know we have some actually head covers on our website right now that are made out of Mizuno ball glove leather. We've been a little bit more quiet on that one, but it's kind of testing the market a little bit. But yeah, it's actually made out of recycled ball glove leather that for drivers and mallet putters. So those are on there. But everything else, I mean, we're always just kind of guessing. Soft goods have a lot shorter lead time than hard goods do, so we can be a little bit more flexible for later in the year, or if something new comes up, we can kind of flex a little bit. But we're always thinking about what comes next and what story we want to tell, really, too.
Sweet. Well, hey, I appreciate the time today. It's fun to chat with you, explore JPX a little bit. There's more products in the lineup. We need to cover them at some point. I know you got the show coming up, and I look forward to seeing how things go over there for you and the team. It's always fun to see what Mizuno brings to the table when they're there. But if you can give the people one last thing about JPX 1 before we wrap today, what would you say?
I'd say go try it. That's, I'm not gonna, I can sit here and spew facts at you and try to explain stuff that's, it's gonna bore you pretty quick, but give it a try. That's, we'll let the product speak for itself as we always do. You'll see the ball speed gains. You'll be incredibly surprised at how forgiving it is, how good it sounds like we talked about, and how good it looks. But yeah, for a long time we were an iron company, and we're a golf company as Mizuno stands today. So it's been a long time since we've been able to say that, but we are firmly cemented where we want to be now with this driver. So hopefully you guys try it out and like it. And I'm on the forum, so feel free to shoot me a message and let me know what you think and what your ball speed gains are. I know everybody's having them in here. So I am very, very excited to hear the public reaction now that these things are going to be, they should be in stores now, at least for testing, but they'll be launching at PGA Show. So in store for anybody to try out, and can't wait to hear what people think of them.
Sweet. Well, hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Go check out the JPX One lineup from Mizuno. We have an awesome thread on THP, the Hackers Paradise Forum, where we are chatting about the products as they get hit and experience for the first time. So definitely go share your thoughts there if you can. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.